This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. Kathy Small is a 50-something professor of anthropology. A few years ago, she audited some classes at her university, Northern Arizona University. Auditing those classes, she noticed there was quite a divide between student and professor. Meanwhile, back at the front of her classroom, after 15 years of teaching, she was finding students, in her words, increasingly confusing. Here are some of the questions she was asking herself. Why weren't undergrads dropping by during office hours unless they were in deep trouble in a course? How could some students never take notes in a lecture class? How would the classroom become a place to eat lunch or take a nap? Fieldwork was in order for this anthropologist. She enrolled as a freshman. On the program today, we'll find out what the professor learned. Kathy Small, a.k.a. Rebecca Nathan, author of My Freshman Year, is our guest. Listeners, I invite you to join the discussion with your questions and comments. Perhaps you have a story to share from the point of view of a student, a professor, or a parent. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Rebecca Nathan is a pseudonym for Kathy Small. Kathy Small is a professor of anthropology at Northern University. Professor Small's book, written under the name Rebecca Nathan, now available in paperback from Penguin Books. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Rebecca / Kathy, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, Celeste. I'm fine.
It's good to talk with you.
Thank you.
15 years after you began teaching, your students, you say, were increasingly confusing.
Yes.
Was it something that snuck up on you?
It did, and I think it's because each year they stay the same age. I'm still teaching 18 and 19-year-olds, but I'm getting older. And so it happened in increments year by year, and at some point I realized that I just was no longer in touch with my students, and I felt a lot of professors my own age were not either. And so, as you said, I looked at my anthropology background, and I thought, gee, you know, when a culture seems alien to me, I know what to do. I usually just go and live with them and try to walk in their shoes and move into the village and learn the language. And that's how I come to have some understanding and compassion.
Yeah.
And so I thought I might do the same.
Yeah. What's involved in field work? How does it work?
Well, you know, most of my life was spent going overseas. I worked in the Kingdom of Tonga in the South Pacific. And what it would involve is going there, moving into a village, and living as other people do. At the beginning, it was without running water and electricity, and then making friends and joining the cultural institutions. In Tonga, I was a bark cloth maker with other women, and so I learned a lot about bark cloth making and traditional life really by participating in it. And you also come to understand why people do some of the things they do, because you're in the same situation. And I think that's one of the things that I was able to find out as a freshman.
Hmm. We've got a listener already waiting to talk with you this afternoon, and they are on a cell phone. So let's go and talk with this individual now. Line 4, good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you. I think maybe part of the problem here is that a lot of people are going to college in extremely large numbers compared to, say, 30 years ago, 30, 40 years ago. And certainly in the Chicago area, the quality of the high school graduate or the quality of the high schools, more to the point, is far below what it was 30, 40 years ago. And you are getting an enormous number of people going to college now that I would like to say should have been better educated in high school, and maybe the college would be a lot more appropriate to them. I think a lot of colleges these days are really basically junior and senior year high school instead of college, the way it used to be. And, you know, you hate to say a lot of people shouldn't be in college, but I don't think a lot of people should go to college. I mean, certainly the jobs a lot of people are getting out of college aren't the jobs that really should require college education, but simply do because employers are going to take the person with the most education, even if all they're doing is a little more than working at Home Depot or Walmart. So I think maybe we got too many people going to college, and we're not putting enough money into the grade schools and the high schools to get people half decent education there to begin with.
Okay, well, let's let our guests respond to the issues that you raised.
Yeah, I think your point is really well taken, and many professors are seeing that in the classroom. We're seeing college students who really write as if they're in sixth grade. And this is a shock, and it's part of the reason why we're raising all these questions. But I would ask you to look at it in a positive way instead of the negative way that we failed in some way. And here's the positive way. The positive way is the reason that we're seeing some of this is because of the successes of the democratic educational system, that before World War II, 16% of college graduates went to college. And now it's two-thirds. It's almost 66% of all students who graduate from high school are going to college. So it's a greater cross section of this country. Are they less prepared? Yes. Many of them don't have college educated parents. Many of them are working while they're going to school, and so you do see more of a range in college than you ever saw.
Also, it seems to me that high schools are trying to prepare students. We can argue about what kind of job they're doing and why things aren't maybe what we'd like to see, but high schools are trying to get most of their students. They want to target those kids. They want to say, look, my high school, our high school, this district sends 80% of its students to college.
Absolutely, and the students and parents want that, because they realize in the real world what the difference is between the income earnings of a high school educated person and a college educated person.
I don't know if the caller is still there, if he wants to follow up.
Well, yeah, but I just think of schools in Chicago, high schools in Chicago that used to really turn out quite well educated graduates. Take CVS, Hyde Park High School, Lane Tech, these were really good high schools. They were giving people an education equivalent to private schools. And, you know, forget it. Now it's a joke. I mean, now maybe the equivalent schools exist out in, you know, lily white suburbs, and the reason the schools in the inner city have gotten bad is because, you know, nobody wants to put money into them anymore. But I don't really see the point in sending, I mean, there's always this thing about, you know, it's so expensive to send kids to college. Well, maybe the problem is that we're putting all the money into getting kids into college, and we're not putting money into, you know, first grade through eighth grade and high school. And it's kind of like by the time somebody's 16, 17 years old, if they haven't learned to write, it's really, I mean, you don't want to say it's too late, but in a lot of ways, it's way too late. It should have happened a lot earlier, and you know, I don't know. I don't see it in Chicago. I mean, I see Mayor Daley spending all the money on incredibly expensive projects that makes him look good, like the $500 million he's put into Millennium Park instead of increasing the number of teachers in the public schools, which is, you want to bring the middle class back, hey, you better fix those schools, the grade schools and the high schools.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for your call, and let's let our guest again comment, and then we'll move back to really talking about what is happening in colleges today.
Well, I do really hear your listener, and I agree that there has to be more attention on those beginning grades, and especially not even at the high school level. We're really talking about elementary school, because that's where people learn to read and write. And I do think it's important. It goes throughout the school system, and we're seeing the results of it in the college of people who really are at fifth and sixth grade levels coming in, even though these are bright kids sometimes.
Mm. How significantly has student life changed over the last couple of decades, the last 20 years?
Well, for me, just being a freshman, one of my surprises was how little it had changed. There were so many things that were similar, but there were certain areas of difference that I noticed from my last freshman year, and that was students are working more, and they're more in debt from college. And I think this makes them more practical and more career-oriented than we were. We were more interested in, and you see this in national surveys, in philosophy of life and developing, our ideas about that. And I think students today are more interested in figuring out their place in the world. They're more technological, of course. And in general, they're more concerned with stuff. If you walk into a dorm room of today, you're going to see lofts and levels and things that they go up to the ceiling sometimes in order to be able to hold all the sports equipment, all the music equipment, all the computer equipment. And that's different because my dorm room had a milk crate in it, And that's where I put my books, and that was about it. And I think that's what most students did. And students are, compared to when I went to school before, are a little less political. And in those three areas, there's probably some difference. In most other areas, I see a lot of similarities.
Yeah. One of the things that I thought was interesting was how some students very much have an eye on the future in terms of what they're doing with extra time. Let's say if someone is pre-med or pre-vet, they've got to look and say, what am I doing? What have I got to do to get into that part of my education? So I've got to do community service. I've got to do this. I've got to do that.
Absolutely.
It's not enough to get into college.
Right.
You've got to keep getting in.
Right. And this places multiple demands on student lives that I really didn't see as much before. We went to classes and we had a social life. That was the main thing that we as students did. These students they're having a social life and they're definitely partying and doing that as well. They're going to their five classes. But then, as you said, they feel that they need to be in a professional group. They need to show volunteer work on their resumes, and so they're volunteering. And also, they're doing the one thing really differently from when I went to school, is they're working. Well over the majority of students are working when they go to school, and that's 10, 20 hours a week added to the rest of everything. It really puts a squeeze on their academic schedule.
When I was a student, the costs were much lower, but I still had to hold a couple of jobs.
Did you?
And I also had to do an internship. I also had my eye on what am I going to do after school? Here's what I want to do.
And can I ask what your age is?
I am 50 something, as yourself.
Okay. Oh.
But I also waited a while before I went to college. I worked for a couple of years before I decided I got to get out of this kind of a job.
Right. Most students, when I went to school, and I went to school also at a state institution, they weren't working. And if they were, they worked a few hours, usually at the college. I just find that the numbers involved are really quite different. And many students, it's not just to support their college tuition, because many of them are in debt from the college tuition. That's what's one of the different things, is the rising debt. It's to support the lifestyle as well that they want in college, which is going out to dinner and going out for drinks. It's supporting the cell phone. It's having a car. I never had a car in college. I find that most students now do.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Rebecca Nathan, author of My Freshman Year, What a Professor Learned by Becoming a Student. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Rebecca Nathan, a pseudonym for Kathy Small, who is a professor of anthropology at Northern Arizona University. Her book, written under the name Rebecca Nathan, now available in paperback from Penguin Books. Listeners, if you'd like to join us with a question, a comment, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Well, when you decided you would do this, you decided you'd follow the freshman student script as closely as you could.
As I could.
Yeah. What is what is the freshman student script? What's on that syllabus?
Well, for me, what it meant at my university is first getting a student parking pass, one of the hardest things I had to do, rather than using my faculty ID. It meant going to our freshman seminar and going to a summer program that introduced me to college life. It meant moving into the dorms. I moved out of my house and into the dorms. And also so that I would get the sense of what a freshman dislocation, because I knew the town and I had many friends and family in the town. I told my friends and family that for a year, I'm going to see them on vacation, and I'll talk to them on the phone. But other than that, I'm going to be having my social life and my meals and everything else at the college. And so I didn't see my friends for a long period of time. I thought that would give me more of a sense of homesickness. I took a diverse set of courses. I took five courses. And they were not in my areas of expertise. And I got to see what it was like, for instance, to be the worst student in a class, which I certainly was in my engineering class. And it was a good experience for me because I asked stupid questions and got to feel what that felt like. And I went to tutoring every week in order to keep up. And I had to use the resources of my fellow students in order to be able to pass my class.
At the same time, you were holding down a job as an anthropologist.
That's right. You know, I felt I was doing something similar to what they were doing. I ate in the student cafeteria areas and had a student meal plan and took the bus to class and got to see why sometimes I'm late for class. Because the bus was late, you know, and I found myself doing many of the same things that I complained about as a professor.
Let's talk with some other listeners. Next, we go to a listener on a cell phone on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I would like to make a quick comment and ask a question of your guests. This is an excellent program. I worked at Vineyards of Higher Education, and when I started my career in the 70s, the state paid about two-thirds of my tuition, and I paid a third. Today, that's almost reversed, and the state is just paying about a third, and students are having to pay two-thirds with increasing costs of tuition all the time. I think that leads to students having to work. A lot of my students work one job. Many of them have to work two jobs. Not only lifestyle, which I agree with that, but also just to pay the bills. But my question is, when I talk to my students, I sense a lot of pessimism about the future in many ways, related not only to environmental issues, but what kind of jobs will be there, et cetera, et cetera. And I was just wondering, you would be obviously a lot closer to it than I would. Did you sense that with the freshmen that you interface with a pessimism or not very positive about their future in terms of economics. I had one student tell me that she's just realized that she will not have the lifestyle that her parents had. I was just kind of curious if you came across that. I'll hang up and listen, and thank you very much.
Sure. Well, I think your caller is right that our public universities are really no longer public anymore because it is it's our students and our parents that are paying most of the cost at this point. And that has changed, that has turned the tables a little bit on student debt, which makes them, I wouldn't say, I didn't see more pessimism as much as I saw more panic, more worry from the standpoint of students and students' reports to me about their parents, that they're worried about being able to get out and get a job quickly. So there's more concern with what am I going to do? What is this good for? What is this degree good for? What can I do with an anthropology degree when I graduate immediately? And what can I do with a philosophy degree? What can I do with an English degree? And so people are much more looking for majors that have career attachments to it or job titles attached to it. They are looking for internship possibilities that would move them more seamlessly into a job. And what I saw is more of that very practical aspect of student life. Occasionally, what it meant for students, I thought, is that they felt pushed by their parents to be in a particular major, to be in a business major, to be a nursing major, when in fact their interests might be different from that or wider than that, but they didn't want to be in a field that they knew didn't have a job title attached.
Hmm. Let's take another call. Listener in Champaign, line two. Hi.
Yeah. Excuse me. The first part was that when I'd worked my way through college, but the summer job that I had, I made some really pretty good money that I could almost put myself through, and maybe I'd pick up something part-time. Actually, my last 2 years I was in a fire station, so I actually had a place to stay. I was a student fireman, so that really helped.
Yeah.
The main point is, or the next point is that, and I taught in college, is this great inflation, that's occurring. What's your feeling, the students, do they feel that everyone should have the A or, that kind of thing, or didn't you pick that up?
Mm-hmm. Definitely I picked that up. there is great inflation going on, and I do think that it's more complex than how great inflation is usually represented, and it's usually represented that we have faculty without tenure, and we have student opinions counting very much toward their tenure bids, and so faculty inflate grades. I really don't think that is the main reason that grades are inflating. And I think it goes back to this idea, again, of the cross-section of youth that are coming to college now. I'm going to speak now as a professor and not as a student, but when I see a student who is really trying and really trying to work with me in a course, it's very hard. You can think of grades as telling them what their performance level is in the class, and you also can think of grades as motivating factors and as ways of encouraging people within college. And I think it's the tension between those two that sometimes affects grade inflation, that you want to see a student who's the first in their generation to go to school, even though they may be a little bit less prepared, and so their paper doesn't quite look as good. You want to encourage them, and so they're going to get the B instead of the C.
Mm-hmm. No.
I think some of that is at work, along with, those other factors.
Well, I would agree, because I've done the same thing. In other words, even on papers or exams, you know, where they were and the growth that has occurred during
yes.
time. But also sometimes you have administrators that want their department to look good, and so there's pressure on the faculty to make, you know, everyone happy, you know, and that occurs at certain places, you know, that in certain departments and sometimes among certain colleges.
Yeah, I think the pressure is working both ways these days as grade inflation has become more of an issue. And there's some departments where there's pressure to hold the line and make sure there's lots of C's so the department looks like it's rigorous. You know, at the same time, there's pressure from in other places, especially in those courses they call gateway courses, the freshman courses, to not give so many D's and F's so that you don't lose your retention rate.
Right.
You don't keep so I think that it's happening in both directions right now, which may be a good thing.
And the final criticism sometimes too is that universities have become more like corporations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time that if you had a class, you know, you're building a program, you had a class and you only had maybe 6 or 8 students or something or other, that, you know, let's say in philosophy or some of these other disciplines, that they would continue on. Today what happens is if you don't have the numbers, that program may not last.
That's right.
So, very good show.
Right.
Thanks for the call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. If you'd like to talk with our guest, Rebecca Nathan, the author of My Freshman Year, What a Professor Learned by Becoming a Student. Rebecca Nathan, the pseudonym for Kathy Small. This book now, My Freshman Year, has been out for a while now. What kind of response has your report of undergraduate life received from readers who are members of university communities?
Well, you know, one of the surprising things has been how much the book is being read, I guess, and it really did surprise me. The number of calls I'm getting, the number of emails, and it's so much so that I've had to take a partial leave from my university for this year to go around the country and respond to these requests. So I am speaking mostly with faculties across the country. I have about 25 university visits that I'm making of people who have read the book and said, I think that we're seeing some of these same patterns. Can we all talk together about what we're seeing? I think professors in many places and administrators are confronting these same issues. And as a matter of fact, University of Illinois is one of them. And I'm going to be speaking there in October 15th and 16th. And in that case, I'm speaking with honors students who in some way are different from some of the things that I've said that I've seen in the book, and have a special role to play in the university.
Hmm. Maybe when you're here, you'll stop by.
I'd be happy to.
Great. Okay, we'll have you back.
Okay.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Charleston now on line 4. Hi.
Hello. I'm calling, and I'm a student at Eastern Illinois University, so all of this is kind of, you know, hitting home.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to call and kind of give my opinion on what's happening with colleges and, like, college education in the United States today. And, like, it seems to me that when the two of you went to school back in maybe, like, the 60s and 70s, it was you know, a privilege. And people had to, like, really earn their way to get there and then, you know, make a better life for themselves. And nowadays, these are my, you know, observations from school. It seems that a lot of people are here because their parents went to college, made a good life, and then, you know, insisted that their children go to school and that they aren't here, you know, based on their own will and, like, passion for education and desire to be learned. And and now it seems like more that this is like a pathway to becoming successful, but but everybody does it. You said 66% of graduates go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And so now is that making, you know, is it getting dumbed down? Is there grade inflation? And is the college education actually, you know, worth less? Like, I know I'm looking to graduate, and, you know, I could be starting at $30,000, you know, as a salary.
Well, you know, I think it's worth less in the sense, if you want to look at it financially, it's worth less in the sense that when you have so many more people with college degrees, what you're finding is that you have to go on to graduate school to be different,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know,
yeah.
to get the edge. There still is a huge difference between what high school graduates make and what college graduates make, but more and more, I think we're raising the bar, and we're pressuring people to go on more for master's degree, in order to, you know, or professional degrees in order to make the living that they're interested in. You know, the only thing that you say that I might disagree with a little bit is that in my day, it was so much of a privilege. I mean, I think it probably was a little bit more so.
Yeah.
But going back to school, I really remember being pushed to go to college the same way that you probably were. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I was ready to go to college. I probably should have taken a year off before I went back, or maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
But I was expected to go on to school, and I did. And as a result, I did, in my real freshman year, a lot of the things that I see students doing now, like blowing off the freshman year,
mm-hmm.
because they finally got out of the house and they have so much freedom that they don't know what to do with it. And they make the mistake that I made, which is with all that freedom and no one looking over your shoulder, gee, you don't even have to get up in the morning to go to class.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a lot of times that's what I did. I didn't go to class, and I see students doing the same thing now.
Yeah, and that's one thing that worries me is that they're, you know, they come down here and either they waste their own money or their parents' money, and they don't, you know, get what they could out of it. And, like, from my experience, college has been, you know, a great experience. I've learned a lot about myself.
You know, it's one of the messages when I speak to students, it's one of the messages I'm trying to get across is there's a real difference between getting your degree and getting an education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it would be great if you understood that difference. What do you think could be done as a student who sounds like a recent student? What do you think could be done to convince people to not just jump through the hoops, but to do some really interesting things with your education?
You know, that's a really good question. In my experience, what it was, actually, I read Stephen Covey's Seven Habits, and his main focus was like on bettering yourself.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that education is a key to bettering yourself, and then also hopefully going on to like better the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if maybe that's just, you know, specifically something that I found out that made education important to me. But if that's something that other people might find kind of inspiring too.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things I did find in interviewing students is that there's a real difference between freshmen and upperclassmen in how they deal with things like alcohol,
yeah.
you know, and partying, and the seriousness of school. And I would say, in general, people get more serious as they go through school,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're closer to where you are now by the end than they are to the beginning, even if they don't quite arrive where you arrived at.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think that's a good point.
Well, thanks for the call.
Well, yeah, I appreciate it.
Nice hearing from you this afternoon. Let's take another call. Listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. You know, that last caller really brought up a tremendous line of discussion. I really appreciate that. I've always looked at it. I came here in 1981 to go to the University of Illinois, did my undergraduate and graduate work here. And I found the 80-20 rule really kicked in. 80% of the people were here to get a piece of paper with the University of Illinois stamp on it, and only 20% were really here to learn. And I found that true in my undergraduate as well as my graduate experience. And I think that's probably universal. I don't think that is specific to the University of Illinois. And so that's, I think, one answer to the rule. Most people, there's a smaller percentage of people who are really trying to learn. There's a lot of people who want to get the degree because that's got some face value. As far as grade inflation goes, I taught at the University of Illinois for a year, and what I found is that there are some pressures to improve grades artificially or to inflate grades. But I think the biggest problem is that, I guess here's my philosophy. If you set clear learning standards and then you teach to those learning standards and everybody does well, that's not grade inflation.
Right.
That's actually teaching. And in my opinion, the biggest failure is these teachers who teach on a bell curve, where they demand that half of their students will do below grade work. You know, to me, that's insane. That's not grade. That's not grade deflation or grade inflation. That's just simply an arbitrary standard. If you want people to succeed, then you give them clear standards, clear goals, and then teach those. Those people who meet the standards should do well. And if any student fails, in my opinion, it's because the teacher has failed. So that's a whole other spin on the whole grade inflation. I don't believe in easy grading, but I believe in good teaching. And good teaching means that every single student should be able to succeed.
I'm with you.
And then the last thing that I had, and I'll let you comment on anything you care to, is the whole question of work. For my undergraduate and graduate work, I worked 2 to 3 jobs the entire 7 years that I was going to school here. And that's, I think, a big change. That's a big difference. Today, I see a lot of the undergraduates that come into the University of Illinois, they're not working. They've never had a job before. They've never had a job in high school. They've never had a job when they're in school. They have no idea what the world of work is all about. And it's because the baby boomer generation has been able to pay for, their kids' education, which on one side is good because certainly it was a struggle working a couple of jobs at a time. On the other hand, these kids have missed out. The current generation has missed out on important life experiences. I mean, if nothing else, let's go ahead and make our big job mistakes now when you're working at McDonald's or when you're working at some local bar or when you're working at some delivery service, a florist or whatever it might be. Make the mistakes now so you don't make them when you're in your real job later on. So anyway, I'm just kind of curious if you have any comments about that. It's been a great conversation. Thank you.
My turn?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me say first, the only thing that I disagree with that the speaker said, and that's about jobs. At least if you believe the national statistics, what they're telling us, and they include colleges, including community colleges, but what they're telling us is that more people work now who go to school than ever did. And right now, 56% of seniors nationwide have jobs off campus, including all kinds of students, part-time as well. 2/3 of all students work while they go to school. So, it may just be some of the students that you're seeing aren't working, but I don't think that's true nationally. The other things, their points again, well taken. And I certainly agree with your idea about teaching, that high standards is important. And what I'm talking to other teachers about is keep the high standards, but do one thing differently if you're not already doing it, and it's keep the it's elevate the support you're giving to students. So make the support as high as the standards. Many professors look at high levels of support for students sometimes is hand-holding, and I don't. I think if we're going to have high standards, if it's high standards for a test, give them study guides, give them study sessions, make extra office hours, give more support for students as we make the standards higher. Mm. So that's something I certainly agree with. The 80-20 thing that your listener had talked about, in some ways I found a little bit different when I actually asked students, and I did ask them the question directly and anonymously. I put a big piece of butcher paper up on the hall and put bunches of markers around, and I said, be honest, if you could just pay for the courses, pay for the credits that you have left, would you pay for it, take the degree, and run? I found that the majority of students, and it was a surprise to me, the majority of students said that they wouldn't. They wouldn't just pay for the credits, take the degree, and run. Now, not all the reason that they said that they wouldn't do it was because for a love of learning. Some of it was. Some of it was for a love of college life and wanting to go out into the real world. But most students were not just there for the degree, and I thought that was interesting.
Your fellow freshmen, mm-hmm. when they talked about good teachers, or were there conversations that would begin around something that had happened in a classroom, a subject, a topic? And, that's one of the things that I remember about being very exciting about life on campus, where there, all these ideas were coming together. And, it was so exciting. That kind of excitement, did you find that with the freshmen on your floor in the dorm?
I would have to say no. Hmm. I mean, the honest answer is no. Even though I hope for it, and it's certainly true in some circles, there were certainly the circles who did poetry slams, or even the we had a Christian group in my dorm who they definitely talked about larger issues. But I would say that the main group of students, it was not the world of ideas that they were talking about. They were talking about television shows. They were talking about where we're going for dinner. They would talk about who's dating whom or who's seeing whom. I didn't find a rich intellectual life in general in terms of the dorm conversations. But I did find definite subcultures where people were excited about the world of ideas. And one of the things I'm struggling with as a professor now is how to more encourage that among students and get some of the honors students to take the lead on having these kinds of great conversations that I also remember having in school.
Yeah. Well, we also worried about where we were going to go out and have a beer or who was dating.
Yeah, right.
We did that too. I did that too.
Right.
Let's take one more call this afternoon. Another listener in Charleston, line two. Hi.
I'll be very blunt.
Okay.
If you want success in this life, under the paradigm which we live, attach yourself however you can to a venture capitalist, and you'll never want again. Thank you.
Well, what do you think about that?
Well, it's harsh, but, one of the things that you see happening in school is that same kind of practicality, because it's coming from the society, and so it and that means the parents too, and the parents are talking to the children about to the freshmen about getting a major that that has a job attached, that you're going to be able to do something. Why would you be a philosophy major? Why would you be an English major? What are you going to do with that? And they are putting pressure on students to move away from degrees that are more liberal studies oriented, and that don't clearly hook up with a job title. And I think that there is that pressure. We live in a world that is like that, and students do feel it. And that's why you're seeing nationwide the rise of programs in business, in engineering, in healthcare, in things. It's not always capitalism, although healthcare is capitalism now too. There are things that that people know they can get a job with and make a decent living with, and sometimes make a very good living with.
Yeah. Well, that's not all there is to life, though.
Right.
That's
you know, and you hope that college, that one of the things that a rite of passage like college does is what rite of passages do the world over, and then it gives people a respite from the world. It gives people an alternative place from which to view the world so that they can critique it and so that they can make changes in it as well as being able to join it.
Food for your mind and your soul.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we have to leave it, but we'll get you back on the program in October if we can make that happen.
Okay.
When you're here visiting.
A wonderful conversation
okay.
with your listeners.
Well, there are so many things yet we have not touched on that we'll try and get to in October.
Okay.
Okay. Rebecca Nathan has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. She's the author of My Freshman Year, What a Professor Learned by Becoming a Student. Rebecca Nathan is a pseudonym for Kathy Small. Kathy Small is a professor of anthropology at Northern Arizona University. The book, My Freshman Year, now available in paperback from Penguin Books.